Members and guests, please rise for the invocation by Representative Lear and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Dear Heavenly Father, we come before you today and ask for your grace and wisdom in the work we are doing for the great state of Montana. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The clerk will take the roll.
Mr. Speaker, 98 members are present. Representative Stuart Paragoy is excused.
The quorum is present and the House is ready for business. Are there any introductions? Representative Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request to be off the record and out of the journal for the purpose of an introduction.
So ordered.
Great. Thank you so much. Members, you may have already seen some friends and neighbors. Today, hundreds of our constituents have come to the Capitol to ask us to protect our home through climate action. And a number of them are here in the gallery. Today's activities are sponsored by Montanans for a Livable Climate. They are a statewide coalition of organizations, individuals, and families. They're aligning efforts across the state under the shared goal of building a healthy, safe, equitable and resilient home for all Montanans. Please join me in welcoming them.
Welcome to the House. Representative Matthews.
Mr. Speaker, I request to be off the record and out of the journal for the purpose of an introduction.
So ordered.
Body, I would like to introduce former Representative Amanda Curtis and currently the president of the Montana Federation of Public Employees, along with the MFPE Board of Directors. They are sitting behind us, making sure we are looking out for our friends and neighbors that work in the public realm.
Welcome to the House. Representative Mitchell.
Mr. Speaker, request be off the record and out of the journal for the purposes of an introduction.
So ordered.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to introduce a couple of constituents of Flathead County, Ed Byrne and Mary McCracken.
Welcome to the House. Representative Seekins-Crow.
Mr. Speaker, I request to be off the record and out of the journal for the purpose of an introduction.
So ordered.
Mr. Speaker, today Montana's naturopath physicians have traveled from around the state to be with us today, and a lot of you saw them and were able to imbibe upon their treats out in the fan window. Welcome very much, and thank you.
Welcome to the House. Representative Caleb Hinkle.
Mr. Speaker, I wish to be off the record and out of the journal for the purpose of announcement.
So ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I'd just like to thank our awesome pages for the week. These two, one day, did over 4,000 messages on our desk this week. And so hardworking examples of great examples of pages. But anyway, there's Zach R. Tuskson and Braxton DiMaggio. Thank you.
Thank you, pages. Representative Windy Boy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be off the record and out of the journal.
So ordered.
Just want to remind Mr. Speaker that our representative from on seat number 39 addressed you as Mr. Chairman, so I think the basketball is due his way.
Pass the basketball. I'll be off the record and out of the journal to introduce Real Montana, class of leaders in the natural resources industry in Montana. I believe there's 20 of them, and half of the good half are here in the House. So welcome to the House. Seeing no more introductions, order business number one, communications and petitions.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number two, reports of standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Appropriations recommend that House Bill 28 do pass, signed Representative Lou Jones, Chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Agriculture recommend that House Bills 100 and 104 do pass as amended, signed Representative Joshua Kazmaier, Chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Judiciary recommend that House Bills 163 and 239 do pass. House Bills 37, 112, and 161 do pass as amended, signed Representative Amy Regeer, Chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Human Services recommend that House Bills 194, 200, and 227 do pass. Signed, Representative Jennifer Carlson, Chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Local Government recommend that House Bills 20, 176, and 198 do pass. Signed, Representative Larry Brewster, Chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Taxation recommend that House Bill 221 do pass. Signed, Representative Paul Fielder, Chair. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number three, reports of select committees.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number four, messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the Senate to inform the House of Representatives of the following actions. The following Senate bills and Senate joint resolutions were on this day read through several times and passed, title and history agreed to, and are herewith transmitted to the House for concurrence. Senate Bill 48, Pope, 56, McClaverty, 67, McGilvery, 71, Solomon. Sincerely, Marilyn Miller, Secretary of the Senate. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number five, messages from the governor.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number six, first reading and commitment of bills.
Mr. Speaker, House Bills 280 through 296 are introduced, read first time, and referred to committee. All are posted. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number seven, second reading of bills. Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into a committee of the whole for consideration of business on second reading.
All those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and I appoint Representative Durham as chair of the committee of the whole for the day.
Members of the House will be in order. Members of the good rough start.
Oh, leave him alone.
Thank you, Chief Clerk. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 74. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 74, introduced by Fitzgerald, a bill for an act entitled An Act Removing the Requirement that the Upland Game Bird Enhancement Program Fund Bird Releases, amending section and providing an immediate effective date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Fitzgerald?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 74.
Representative Fitzgerald.
Mr. Chair, basically House Bill 74 is intended strictly to provide more flexibility. The key word there is flexibility in our upland game and bird enhancement program. This program was established in 1987 as a pheasant stocking program, but since then, the legislature has amended the statute to also provide funding for upland game bird habitat projects. Both of these projects are funded by hunters by an allocation from the upland bird license sales. In recent years, landowner demand for habitat projects has steadily increased, while the stocking demands have declined some. HB 74 simply eliminates the statutory requirement and allows FWP to fund both pheasant stocking, upland bird stocking, habitat projects based on demand rather than an arbitrary formula that may or may not fit the project requests that they receive in any given year. Also, House Bill 74 has been endorsed by the Advisory Council, which is made up of biologists, landowners, hunters, local businesses, and legislators who monitor the upland game bird at work and habitat. I would appreciate a green light on this, Mr. Chair.
Is there discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor has closed. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Fitzgerald that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 74 do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee ballot votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paragoy votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 87 representatives have voted aye, 12 have voted no.
House Bill 74 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 75. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 75, introduced by Schillinger, a bill for an act entitled An Act Revising Reporting Requirements for Motor Fuel Tax Refunds, allowing the use of electronic transaction reports for refund claims, amending section and providing an immediate effective date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Schillinger?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill number 74, that it recommended the same be adopted.
My apologies, I was distracted by ice cream. Representative Schillinger.
Understandable, Mr. Chair. I would be too. So, this bill is another great bill by the Department of Transportation that does one basic thing. It simplifies reporting for the consumers of taxed fuel that want to apply for refunds, so for off-road use, rather than having to keep track of every invoice and have it in triplicate. That and then send them in with your request. You can get a summary from the retailer, computer printout at the end of the month or the end of the year, and send them in as a summary. So it simplifies for those requesting refund, and it's also a lot simpler and cleaner for the Department of Transportation, so less time spent on processing, so it saves them money. So the bottom line is more roads, less bureaucracy. Please vote green. Thank you.
Is there discussion? Representative Vinton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a point of clarification, I believe the good sponsor meant to move House Bill 75.
Thank you, Majority Leader Vinton. We will both see the basketball. Is there discussion on House Bill 75? With no discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor has closed. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Schillinger that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 75, it recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paragoy votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 92 representatives have voted aye, 7 have voted no.
House Bill 75 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 82. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 82, introduced by Nicola Kakis, a bill for an act entitled An Act Establishing a Montana National Guard Enlistment Incentive Program, providing for incentive payments, providing for a voluntary contribution to the program of an individual tax return, providing a statutory appropriation, providing rulemaking authority, amending sections, and providing an effective date and a termination date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Nicola Kakis?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report, after having had under consideration House Bill 82, that I recommend the same do pass.
Representative Nicola Kakis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the body. I have the honor to bring before you today House Bill 82. This piece of legislation is the number one priority of the Adjutant General of the Montana National Guard. Right now, we're about 500 members short in our manning for the Montana National Guard. And what I'd like to do is point out, I get this question sometimes, is what does the Montana National Guard do? There's a dual role. Our Montana National Guard, our airmen and soldiers, basically fill the same role that active duty folks do when they're in federal service. So they're pilots, they're infantrymen, whatever it is, they have all the same requirements and deploy and meet all those same requirements. But our National Guard also has a state mission, of course, right? And we're asking ever more and more of that state mission. So that means we're doing firefighting, pandemic response, things like riot control that a lot of folks never really expected to be doing. So we have a tremendous stress on our Montana National Guard, and we have a manning shortfall. So I know that we're talking about manning shortages in every career field. But another thing I'd like to point out is that what it takes to actually find someone in the Montana National Guard or in the military, right? Pretty much all of the forces of modern society are working against the ability to recruit military folks, right? So you have to pass aptitude tests. You can't be obese. You can't have health problems. There's so many things that, eliminate the vast majority of potential recruits from the pool. We're really looking for needles in a haystack. So what this bill effectively does is it gives a small incentive to retirees and veterans who go and find people, talk in their communities, talk in their service organizations about joining the Montana Air National Guard, people who can tell that story, share that story, and then they get a small incentive for that. This kind of program was implemented in a number of states last year in Indiana and Vermont, and it's actually helped those states go from undermanned to meeting their end strength. So I think it's a highly effective program, and I hope you'll vote green. Thank you.
Is there discussion on the bill? There being no discussion on the bill, does the sponsor wish to? Representative Butcher.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask a question of the sponsor. Mr. Chairman, Representative Nick, I'm curious, is this disincentive largely come about because of these crazy mandates for vaccine shots? That seems to be an impact on most of it. Is that what's really fueling this whole thing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butcher, so that did come up in committees, and I will say, having just retired from the Air National Guard, I think our Montana Guard leadership did a really good job of running that clock out as far as not removing people from the service in Montana. As you know, that vaccine mandate doesn't exist anymore DOD-wide, so it's not an issue. The feedback from the recruiting office and from General Aronick was that it might have had a small factor, but we're looking at wider factors that are much more powerful, just that vaccine mandate. There was about 100 people, 100 airmen and soldiers who had applied for some kind of a exemption. My understanding, at least on the Air Force side, is that we actually didn't lose anybody to that. So I would say that it's probably a small factor, but not the overarching issue here.
Thank you. Reminder, no proper names on the House floor. Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, a question for the sponsor.
Does the sponsor yield?
I do.
Mr. Chair, so as the members know, in 2005, at the height of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, the U.S. military needed more soldiers. And as a result, the National Guard Recruiting Assistance Program, known as GRAP, and a smaller version called the Army Reserve component, ARAP, or RRAP, were created. This, in turn, led to an ability and incentives for soldiers to be able to kind of recruit within their own, which sounds like very similar to our program, but led to lots of soldiers being embroiled in a what was some arrests and leading to kind of a, quote, mismanagement of funds kind of situation. So I just want to make sure, and maybe you can shed light, that we have some assurances from General Ronick, or I'm sorry, from the department, that we are going to, in fact, make sure that this program does not affect our military members in such a negative way as these two programs. We have those assurances?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kearns, first question I asked when I was asked to sponsor this bill was about GRAP. So I'm very familiar with GRAP. So I'll say a couple things about GRAP. That program was totally different. The numbers were much, much bigger. There was a third-party contractor hired out to do that. Not really disputable was that at a time of war, when we were at the height of the Iraq War and Afghanistan, it was extremely effective at garnering recruits. The big difference is this is a local program. It's going to be administered by our National Guard. No third-party contracts with in-house rules. And the real scandal of GRAP wasn't that there was a lot of misuse of funds. As you probably know, the real scandal was some individuals were investigated and flagged erroneously for having done nothing wrong when the investigation was done, and then that flag stayed with them throughout their career. So the first question I asked was about GRAP. But this program is structured differently than GRAP and just different in many ways, and it's highly effective. So it's kind of the best of without the drama. So I hope you vote green. Thank you.
Is there discussion? Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to speak to the bill. First, I would like to say that as the daughter, sister, and wife of people who have served in the National Guard at some point in this state, that has nothing to do with my opposition to this bill. This is not our job. I don't feel like this is our job to advertise and recruit for this job. As the sponsor suggested, there is a recruiting office already. I'm sure they're funded. We have a lot of essential state services that are not being provided to our youth in this state right now. Many of them are not covered services, and they are struggling to get increases so that they can provide essential services to our at-risk youth. So I'm having mixed feelings about standing up against this bill, but I want to tell you that this amount of money in this bill, excluding the presumed individual donations, would cover 2,000 nights at the current rate in our shelter care for youth homes, which are for at-risk youth with department or justice affiliations. Or more importantly, would cover 6,000 nights of a provider rate increase that would allow them to keep their doors open. So as we go through this session and we talk about workforce shortages, they're everywhere. And for me, the priority is going to be taking care of vulnerable Montanans. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there further discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? Representative Nicola Kakos.
Members of the body, thank you. Yes, I do want to say that to the representative from Manhattan, I do appreciate the comments. I gave those some thought myself, but I do think the Montana National Guard is an essential service and offers an essential service, whether that's firefighting, pandemic response, all the essential services we don't even know until we need, we deputize them. We do have a recruiting office. They don't qualify for this. The problem is they're struggling so hard. This is a rural state. It's huge. I've worked with those folks. What we're asking for them is a lot, to travel this entire rural small state and find these needle in a haystack type folks who not only qualify for a service, but then, you know, want to volunteer to risk their lives, right? So we're talking about a small number of people. This is a small stipend to basically incentivize and deputize other recruiters. That's been effective. So I do appreciate those concerns. I think in the overall grand scheme of things, though, it's a net positive. So I hope you all do pass on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nikolakakos. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Nikolakakos that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 82, it recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Peregoy votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 63 representatives have voted aye. 36 have voted no.
House Bill 82 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 151. The clerk will read the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 151, introduced by Hopkins, a bill for an act entitled An Act Generally Revising State Building Construction Procurement Laws, raising the cost threshold of construction activities that require legislative approval, raising certain cost thresholds for supervision requirements of building construction, providing for inflationary adjustment of certain cost thresholds through rulemaking, authorizing the Department of Administration to negotiate a contract without competitive bidding if an emergency or public exigency exists, to negotiate deductive changes of a greater percentage of the total cost to the project when bids received exceed the appropriation, raising the cost threshold under which the Department of Administration may prepare working drawings for building construction, raising the cost threshold for waiving certain security requirements, allowing for public notice through electronic means for competitive bidding on certain projects, allowing bidding construction bids to be secured in an irrevocable letter of credit, providing rulemaking authority, establishing reporting requirements, amending sections, and providing an immediate effective date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Hopkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 151 that I recommend the same do pass.
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House Bill 151 comes to you as part of the executive's red tape initiative. I have the pleasure of serving on the long-range planning subcommittee for appropriations, and we deal with a lot of infrastructure. We deal with a lot of construction projects, and in a lot of places, the vast majority of them, we require government to wait for us to come back into session to bring us these large for our approval, for our sign-off. But we are only here for 90 days once every 2 years, and so we tell the department, we tell government that there are certain types of small construction projects, compliance projects, ADA or what have you, that they need to complete when we are not here, or we need to have an extra 10, 20 days to a legislative session. And I prefer them to just do it when we are not here. So those all have caps on them. So if a project is under $150,000, the department can take care of that project while we are gone. And then 2023 happened, and construction inflation is an absolute monster. And so now those same projects that we've been requiring the department to do when we aren't here, they literally cannot do because the cost of that project now goes over what we allow them to work with. So if you look through the bill, you will see adjustments in the bill for inflation on all of those fronts. Additionally, we're looking to bring procedures a little bit closer to the Montana Procurement Act. And so to talk about that, Mr. Chairman, I move that House Bill 151 be amended, and I ask that HB 0151.2.003 be posted and deemed read.
The question now arises for the motion of Representative Hopkins that we amend House Bill 151 with Amendment 151.2.3. Is there discussion on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So having had that posted, another part of the bill, while we were looking to bring it closer to the Montana Procurement Act, was to get rid of the mandate that the department places these in newspapers for notification. Fact of the matter is it's 2023. I'm a big nerd, love newspapers, going to keep reading newspapers, happen to represent a district that I think has the best real newspaper in the state of Montana. Apologies to everybody else. But the fact of the matter is we communicate differently today, and we have better ways of accessing and interacting and getting this information out to individuals. So in the original version of the bill, it got rid of this mandate. Now, a Democratic colleague of mine on the committee had asked me to write up an amendment that would make the department report to long-range planning for these projects that they had done during the interim. I had that amendment written up. There was an additional amendment that was in committee, and I did not get to the committee to tell them, you know, one was a friendly amendment, one was an unfriendly amendment, so apologies to the State Administration Committee. But the amendment you see before you is to remove that unfriendly amendment and return the bill to its original form, and I would ask for a green light.
Is there discussion on the amendment? Representative Cordham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With respect to the sponsor, I request that you consider opposing this amendment for the following reasons. Firstly, newspapers are not yet dead. They're an important public place to see information, especially for our more technologically adverse Montanans. And in the rural weekly newspapers, over 80% of them are consumed in a physical medium, that is paper in hand. So they're still very essential. Secondly, the constitutional right to know what our state and local governments are doing is very important, and this is one of those ways we can protect that constitutional right. And finally, this is an important notice to taxpayers how their money is being spent. It increases the potential competition building and makes sure those tax dollars can go farther. So please, with respect, vote no on this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there discussion on the amendment? Representative Dooling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regards to this amendment, I want to first of all apologize to the bill sponsor because the amendment I had assumed was a friendly amendment. Had I known it was not a friendly amendment, we would have had a more robust discussion about the amendment in committee and decided then whether it was good or not. And so with that, please pay respect to the original bill to the bill sponsor and his original bill, and let's do pass on this amendment. Thank you.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? Seeing no further discussion on the amendment, the question now arises on the motion of Representative Hopkins. I recommend amendment 151.2.3 that the same do pass. Those in favor of the amendment, vote aye. Those opposed, vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paragoy votes no.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 67 representatives have voted aye, 32 have voted no.
The motion has passed. Is there discussion on the bill as once amended? Correction, the amendment has passed. Is there discussion on the bill as once amended? Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if the sponsor would yield a question.
I yield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the sponsor. I wonder if you can help us navigate those first two sections. You have a lot more experience in this area than I think probably most everyone in this chamber. My question is, it looks like we haven't amended 18-2-102 for at least 20 years. But as I'm reading the first section, it looks like our consent isn't going to be required for anything that is below $300,000 in the way of new construction. Is that an accurate reading of that provision?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it is. So currently, it is $150,000. And the idea being that construction inflation has been such a monster that that project that used to cost $150,000 has now boosted up to the point where, you know, we need to cover it here in order for them to still be the same kind of work. So to be clear, if this were to pass into law, the way that it would work is that department would have authority from us to complete small construction projects in this section up to $300,000 and then would have to report all of those new projects that they do between that $150,000 to $300,000 marker to long-range planning, and specifically because I anticipate by the time that we end up leaving this building, our interim budget committees will be permanent, with any luck. They will be reporting that to the interim Section F long-range planning subcommittee. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, will the sponsor continue to yield?
Will the sponsor yield?
I yield, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the sponsor. I would like to also ask you about that second section, because I'm confused in terms of what the role of the Department of Administration will be for construction projects under $300,000. I'm reading this to suggest that in that circumstance, they would have no authority under this provision to do supervision of construction of the kind of projects that we have just authorized up to $300,000. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you know, whenever we're discussing statutory language, I tend to want to just go with whatever you happen to be thinking at the time, because I think you happen to have a better brain than I do for it. But that being said, no, I am reasonably assured by the executive, by department, that this enables them to conduct small construction projects that come in under $300,000, again, with the reporting requirement, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion on the bill? Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, would the sponsor yield to a question?
Will the sponsor yield?
I yield, Mr. Chairman.
I just have a question very similar in the vein of our good friend from Billings on page 3. And so I recall we've had conversations about our procurement laws, which I have the unfortunate gift of spending some time in a prior life. And so I'm always hesitant and careful when we are removing situations from the procurement process, as the procurement process is being protective of public funds, ensuring that we're careful with taxpayer money. So my question, which I do not know the answer to, is it looks like there is a new exemption on page 3. Public exigency has always been one. It's in Title II, which is referenced there on page 20. Or on page 3, line 23. But then I'm looking at the addition of an emergency as defined in Title 10, which would be a new exception to the procurement process. And so as I was looking at it, my question was, what would be an example of an emergency that wouldn't be a public emergency, and sort of how did you come to that language?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, so to be clear, this is part of the, you know, executive's red tape initiative. It wasn't so much me writing the bill necessarily, but so just a couple of situations that I could think of. Obviously, we were here for 90 days. Once every 2 years, winter is a thing in Montana, and say that you have a school system that during the winter has a significant pipe break. Right, that probably needs to be repaired, and if it happens to, you know, break the threshold or what have you, and they can't do it, probably not a good idea to have that sitting for about a year. So it's just trying to take into consideration all those things that can happen when we are outside of the session that are not big construction projects that we of the legislature would want to reserve our ability to sign off on. And I mean, look, the idea is to streamline and try to make government as efficient as possible. And so, yeah, just trying to take into consideration all the possibilities that could take place when we're gone. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Is there a discussion on the bill? Representative Galloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor.
Does the sponsor yield?
I yield, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sponsor, how many of these type of projects are typically involved in this a year, and did we have a glut of them build up since they weren't able to move forward, and did we get those addressed since they weren't able to do that? And
Mr. Chairman, Representative, so I don't know exactly how many of them took place during the preceding interim when we weren't here, but so an example that the department used during the hearing in state administration was literally the example that I just given here, where a pipe had burst, and luckily it had come in low enough that they were able to get it done, but they look at a bunch of other places, and I mean, they see it go over the threshold, and they just can't do anything about it. They have to wait. We demand that they wait for us to come back to approve it. So one thing, if this ends up passing and becoming law, you will certainly see every single interim and every single session a rather thorough report listing every single one of these projects, the cost of these projects, start date for the projects, completion date for the projects, etc. But it is, one, a very real thing that they run into, because Montana winters are Montana winters, for instance, and it's something that while we are looking to find additional efficiencies in government, we also need to hold on to the ones that we currently have, right? And if we're telling the department it needs to be in a position to handle these type of projects when we're not here, then the threshold has to be to a point where they can actually handle these projects when we're not here. Mr. Chairman.
Is there further discussion on the bill? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor has waived. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Hopkins that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 151 do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee ballots? Absentee votes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paragoy votes no.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 70 members have voted aye, 29 have voted no.
House Bill 151 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 169. Will the clerk read the title of the bill?
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 169, introduced by Brockman, a bill for an act entitled An Act Clarifying Confirmation Requirements for Interim Judicial Appointees, amending section and providing an immediate effective date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Brockman?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 169, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Brockman.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 169 clarifies that interim judiciary appointments must be confirmed by the Senate at the next regular session of the legislature and not a special legislative session that may precede the next regular legislative session. This ensures that the electorate has the ultimate say in approving or disapproving of governor-appointed judges who were appointed early enough to allow them to file for the next general election. House Bill 169 is a common sense way to ensure the checks and balances in a judicial appointment. House Judiciary agreed, and they passed 169 out of committee 19-0. Mr. Chair and members of the body, I ask that you do the same. I ask the same do pass on House Bill 169. Thank you.
Is there discussion on the bill? Seeing no discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor has waived. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Brockman that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 169, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those in opposed will vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paragoy votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 95 representatives have voted aye, 4 have voted no.
House Bill 169 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 170. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 170, introduced by Gunderson, a bill for an act entitled An Act Repealing the State Energy Policy, repealing sections and providing an immediate effective date. Mr. Chair.
Representative Gunderson.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 170, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Gunderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the body, I bring you HB 170. This has got to be one of the simplest bills you may hear all session. It's short, sweet, and to the point. HB 170 follows the intent, notice the word intent, of the governor's red tape reduction plan, in that it removes a bloated bag of air that only takes up space in MCA. It says nothing, does nothing, and it has no teeth. It's just lofty goals, and that's about it. Mr. Chair.
Is there discussion on the bill, Representative Sullivan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'd like to speak to the bill. So this state energy policy has been has 30 years of the legislature's fingerprints on it. And so over time, I think we've counted about 15 sessions where we've gone in and had bipartisan movement on this policy. It has oil, gas, coal, wind, renewable, hydro, planning for future technologies, and all of the above, pretty much. And so the latest addition was in 2021. And this shows the direction that our state wants to go with our energy policy. It's normal. A lot of states have it. Two reasons I'm going to vote no today that I'm going to share with you. It was presented as a red tape type bill, but no one from industry showed up. And so there was one proponent, and it was from the governor's office. And so I don't feel like we're doing anything here to promote better working conditions for industry in any way for the energy sector. Second, I also ask myself when I do hear bills, I try and say, you know, does this make sense no matter who our governor is? And I think that's a good way to think about policy as we decide things, because a bill should make sense no matter who is in the executive branch. And if the success of a bill depends on who our governor is, that's pretty short-sighted in my book. So I think this is giving away our discretion. It is the place in our code where we put in how we feel about energy policy and what our plans are for the future. It shares our mission with other states and other people. And so I feel like this is more politics and less policy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The House will be in order. Is there further discussion on the bill? Representative Beattie.
Mr. Chairman, I'll speak to the bill. I was first troubled when I saw this bill coming forward. But then as I thought about it, I've come to agree with my seatmate that this is a necessary action, not because we don't need an energy policy, but because this is simply an aspiration, and I think having it in place is actually a detriment towards coming to a sensible energy policy. The state of Montana needs a comprehensive energy policy, one well thought out and one in which the legislature actively participates. It needs to have a structure by which that such a policy is developed and then also put into effect. By having this these statutes remaining on the books, I think what we have is the illusion of an energy policy. I think we need to get to work and actually have one. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion on the bill? Representative France.
Mr. Chairman, I think the comments from my colleague in the Bitterroot Valley are valid and on point. The problem is that while the governor has recommended terminating the energy policy that we, the legislature, has enacted and essentially said to us, don't worry, I've got this covered, when the energy policies of Montana are vital to every citizen in the state, I'm not sure that abdicating or taking away the one energy policy we have on the books is really advancing movement towards what we as Montanans want to accomplish by way of clean energy, by way of cost-efficient energy, and by way of a certain and regular supply of energy for all our citizens. I have a question for my colleague in the Bitterroot Valley, if he'd yield.
Does Representative yield?
I yield.
I'm just wondering, since we've now opened up this debate and question about where the state should go, whether we might join together in a resolution to the governor's office that he move forward with developing a broad-based, broadly supported energy policy, and so that we don't end up here in 2 years with no progress having been made on what you and I both think is important for the state of Montana.
Mr. Chairman and my friend from north of the Bitterroot. One of the things I might be interested in is energy policy. Regrettably, I have overcommitted myself in other policy areas. I would simply say I will not support a resolution I haven't read yet. But that being said, I think that, number one, I don't think my intention would not be to simply, and nor is it at the intention of our governor, to suggest that we should just throw the ball into his court and just say, trust me. I would simply suggest that we need to come up with some effective way ourselves to figure out how we're to engage in the development of a policy and then the actual execution of that in a way that we can monitor it in a meaningful way. Perhaps that would be fodder for a study bill, because you've got to get started during the interim. At this point, I have an open mind about the way forward. The one thing I am sure of, and I've shared this with the chair of our FRET committee on many occasions, and I believe that the chair would agree with me, is that this is a point of public policy that ought to be addressed, should be addressed expeditiously and carefully, and it's time for us to get with it. That is why I support, as I indicated earlier, elimination of a policy that doesn't seem to have teeth in it.
Stand by, Representative France. Members and guests in the House of Representatives, it's important that we note proper decorum doesn't allow for applause or cheering or negative responses. So unless you have an issue that you can deal with in the hall, please keep your applause only to our strict rules of decorum. Representative France.
Mr. Chair, good representative from the Bitterroot, I'd close by observing that the past governor left a climate policy that was developed by a broad spectrum of our citizenry on the present governor's desk. Since assuming office, the governor has done nothing with that policy. We now have the governor's office saying, let's strip out the only statute we have on the books that even expresses a sense of a broader energy policy. So I would look forward to working with my colleagues across the aisle and with my caucus in moving a broadly supported energy policy forward in Montana, because whether we're talking about climate or energy conservation or how much our consumers are paying when they turn on the lights, I think it's a really important issue. So thank you for your comments.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the body. I'd like to remind everyone that this is the people's house. And I take offense to this being called nothing but a hot bag of air. This policy was put into place 30 years ago. That means 15 different legislative bodies have had their fingers on this. We all came here to represent our constituents and serve them in the people's house. Over the interim, leadership from both sides of the aisle in this chamber came together and said, we're going to build the strength of the legislative branch. And what's this bill doing? We're handing it to the second floor. Why give that power to the second floor? The second floor says that they have a plan. Where's it written? how do our citizens get to have input into this policy if it's not through the People's House? Let's continue to build the power of the legislative branch and quit giving our power to the second floor, regardless of what party has control down there. This is the legislative branch. Let's serve the citizens of the state of Montana and let their voice be heard.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I agree that this is the People's House, and I would point everybody's attention to the 2022 election as a decent example of how the majority of the people of Montana might feel on something like this bill, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Representative Matthews.
Mr. Chair, speak to the bill. Hearing some of the discussion, I heard that we want to make sure we have the opportunity to develop a policy, and I would just like to note that from my quick look at this, we are also repealing energy policy development process, which is counter to that. So I just wanted to mention that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Seeing no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple points. And it seems to be a misunderstanding, excuse me, that this came from the governor's office. It was brought up in committee, and my words were twisted. If you noticed, when I opened, I said intent. And I repeated it, intent to stay with the governor's policy. Governor had nothing to do with this. My good seatmate across there from seat 48 seemed to have a misunderstanding of where that came from. And it is a bag of words. And I guess I can look back at the different administrations that had a hand in this. And I'll remind everybody, it was in the 90s during the Schweitzer administration, and a Republican representative from the Flathead brought this to the body. And then Governor Schweitzer mandatorily vetoed it.
Representative, let's keep proper names out of the bill.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, a governor from past that is no longer in office. Actually mandatorily vetoed the bill and added in a portion that says that Montana will actually look at and address greenhouse gases. So to say that it's the legislature's policy to write, I think that proves it wrong. And again, I don't want anybody to think that this was a governor's bill. It's my bill, and I'm bringing it to the body for your use, for your to tell me yay or nay. To give you an idea, we do have policy. We've got it in 14 places in MCA, 15, 24, 3, 1, 0, 1, 15, 3, 2, 101. 15, 32, 401, 15, 72, 102, on and on and on and on. I don't have to read them all. But it's found in MCA already, the guidance to our agencies on how to work with energy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The question now arises on the motion of Representative Gunderson that when the committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 170, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Perigoy votes no.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record his vote.
Mr. Chair, 67 representatives have voted aye, 32 have voted no.
House Bill 170 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 178. Will the clerk read the title of the bill?
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 178, introduced by Walsh, a bill for an act entitled An Act Revising Workers' Compensation Laws Relating to When an Employee is Engaging in Social or Recreational Activity, Revising Laws Relating to Employee Injuries During Social or Recreational Activities at the Worksite of the Employer, Amending Section and Providing an Immediate Effective Date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Walsh?
I move that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration House Bill 178, that it recommends the same do pass.
Representative Walsh.
Mr. Chair, it's my pleasure to bring to this body House Bill 178, a bill that simply clarifies the workman's compensation law on coverage of an employee who's recreating at their place of work. When the employee is no longer working at the time, and simply put, off the clock. This is an area of law that needs clearing up as some employees recreate at the place they work. Think of ski areas, dude ranches, and fishing lodges. An example would be a lift operator at a ski area finishes his or her shift, clocks out, and decides to hook up with his buddies and take a run. Should he or she have an accident or injury, the employee would not be covered under the employer's workers' compensation policy. This bill provides a definition to social and recreation activity and removes the gray area that has allowed the courts to interpret differently. This bill does not take away any other legal remedies that the person could pursue. Mr. Chair, I urge a do pass and stand for questions.
Is there discussion on the bill? Seeing no discussion on the bill, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor has waived. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Walsh that that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 178, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paragoy votes nay.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 75 representatives have voted aye, 24 have voted no.
House Bill 178 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 183. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 183, introduced by Nickel, a bill for an act entitled An Act Revising the Crime Victims Compensation Act to increase reasonable funeral expenses for the victim, increasing the funeral expenses from $3,500 to $10,000, and amending section. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Nickel?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 183, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Nickel.
Well, this isn't as exciting of a bill as we've been seeing here today, but if you'll notice, I'm just going to start right out with a fiscal note. This bill was killed on the floor a couple sessions ago because it was explained to me that this fiscal note was not explained well enough. If you'll notice, there's zeros on there. It's because we don't, as a state, pay for this fund. What the bill is about is about restitution money going to bury people that were killed, murdered in the state of Montana, Montana residents. Right now, if your family member got killed in the state of Montana, they would get $3,500 to be buried. I would like to raise that up to $25,000. This money comes from restitution, and it only regards to, you know, the rest, not the rest of the bill. The only section that we're changing is in regards to the actual burial of the victim. So with that, I do urge a do pass.
Representative Nickel, would you yield to a sponsor from the chair or a question from the chair?
Yes, sir.
Representative Nickel, I heard you state 25,000. I think the bill says 10,000. Could you clarify?
Yes. I apologize for that. Please strike that from the record. It is 10,000, and I must have been dreaming.
Thank you, Representative. Is there discussion on the bill? Majority Speaker, Majority Leader Vinton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Will the sponsor yield to a question?
Does the sponsor yield?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative. On my quick reading of the bill, this may be covered in there, but I'm not sure, since we know that the legal process can take a long time to take place, and a funeral would obviously take place shortly after a homicide occurs. Can you tell me how that might work as far as payment to the victim's family if it takes a year or two for that case to wind through court?
Thank you. That is an excellent question, and I'm pulling out my little Montana Criminal Justice and You book. It says in here that the crime must be reported within 72 hours and submitted in writing to the CVC program, which is the Crime Victim Compensation Program. And then that is to shorten any delays in funding getting put to them. But as far as an exact amount of time, I do not know that answer.
Is there discussion or further discussion on the bill? Representative Butcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sponsor yield. I'm trying to get this all straight.
Yes, I yield.
The most of these criminals don't have any money if there's a murder thing. So you referred to this fund. This is obviously a taxpayer fund. So if the person wants to collect these 10,000, is that going to come out of where's this compensation fund coming from to shorten it? I'm thinking even if somebody isn't poverty stricken, but they're, if you're in civil suit, it's going to take years till the lawyers get most of their money out of it. And then what's left over, maybe there'll be something there. So again, kind of following what the majority leader was line of thought, where are we getting this money? Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for the question, sir. Currently, there is $1.2 million in this fund. So that money is not going to come directly from the person that just murdered somebody. That money is already in a fund, and that money has been collected over the years through restitution, which means that other people that have committed crimes, violent crimes, have they've done work, they've had... their court cases have already been settled, they're already having wages garnished, that type of thing, and that money is going into this fund. So that's where that money is coming from. It's not going to come directly from their murderer, but it is going to come from that same pool of money.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Does the representative continue to yield?
Yes.
So in other words, would this fund come, say that it isn't a case of this bum with no money, and we're going to the restitution fund, but say it's an insurance claim and the insurance company drags it out, does it also cover whether it's a millionaire or whoever is going to be trying to get an insurance on an accident, because obviously we all carry liability insurance, does this fund pay so that the body doesn't get too old before they finally bury him?
Right, so two things on that, sir.
To the bill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Representative Butcher, if you look on the title of the bill, I think that will address your question.
Okay, thank you.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Seeing no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? Correction. Representative Rexton, do you wish to speak on the bill?
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speak to the bill. Or actually, question for the sponsor.
Does the sponsor yield?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative, could you tell us what the name of this fund is or what this fund is? It's not noted in the bill that I can find.
It's called the Crime Victim Compensation Fund.
And this, Mr. Chair, yield to another question.
Thank you. Does the sponsor continue to yield?
Yes, sir.
Representative, is you said that this bill, or this fund, has about a $1.2 million. Is this from donations, or how did this fund come about? Could you give us a little background?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This fund came about through restitution only.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Now, seeing no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close?
Yeah, I would, Mr. Chair, I would love to close, and please vote yes.
The question now arises on the motion of Representative Nickel that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 183, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Representative Knave. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paragoy votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 99 representatives have voted aye, 0 have voted no.
House Bill 183 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 188. Will the clerk read the title of the bill?
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 188, introduced by Perry, a bill for an act entitled An Act Modifying Funding to the Coal Board, amending section and providing an immediate effective date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Perry?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise a report after having had under consideration House Bill 188, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Perry.
This is a bill that extends the coal board until 2023. Currently, the sunset is 2033. Currently, the sunset is 2023. Now, the coal board is a group of individuals that are appointed by the governor to administer the 5.8% of the 12% of the coal severance tax for purposes of funding projects due to the impacts of coal, both positive or negative, on coal communities. Now, this could be an ambulance, it could be a fire truck, it could be helping with water treatment plants in small communities that are affected by coal. In short, projects that are needed but are really beyond the financial means of most of these small rural communities. The board meets quarterly and critically analyzes the requests. The next meeting, by the way, will be here in Helena, and I would encourage any of you to attend. As you read through the body of the bill, however, you'll quickly see that this portion is one of the few items that actually benefits the people of coal country who are impacted by coal. And it's also the only one that we have to keep coming back for every 4, 8, 10 years in order to get it refunded. The communities need this. They can't live without it in terms of major projects. And I urge a strong do pass in support of the folks who keep the lights on. Vote yes.
Is there discussion on the bill? Seeing no discussion on the bill, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor has waived. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Perry that when the committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 188, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paragoy votes aye.
Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 99 representatives have voted aye, 0 have voted no.
House Bill 188 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 205. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 205, introduced by Anderson, a bill for an act entitled An Act Increasing Motor Vehicle Insurance Minimum Limit Laws, increasing the property damage minimum to $50,000, amending section and providing an applicability date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 205, that I recommend the same do pass.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm pleased to bring House Bill 205 to you for your consideration this afternoon. This bill addresses the significant increase in both the value of new and used vehicles, as well as the increases in the cost of repairs in the event of an accident. This bill changes the minimum coverage because of injury or destruction of property of others in any one accident from $20,000 to $50,000. This actually is a consumer's protection bill if you think about it. If you have an accident and are deemed at fault in which the property damage to others exceeds $20,000 and your insurance coverage has that amount as its maximum, your personal assets become in jeopardy. The minimum value of $20,000 was last addressed in this session in this chamber in 2017. Since that time, significant inflation has occurred in both the vehicle values and repair costs. A review of either or both will reveal that the $20,000 minimum is sorely out of date in terms of present costs. That minimum coverage also places the consumer with that value on their policy at risk. And by the way, increasing the coverage from $20,000 to $50,000, according to several insurance companies I talked to, will cost you less than $10 every 6 months. In fact, mine costs $6 on each vehicle. Mr. Chairman, I recommend a do pass.
Is there discussion on the bill, Representative Fern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I, would the sponsor yield for a quick question?
Will the sponsor yield?
Yes, I will.
Mr. Chair, good representative. In consideration of this bill, did you also consider the status quo in respect to bodily injury, the $25,000 or $50,000 portion of coverage, as to whether that's adequate coverage in this day and age? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fern, yes, I did. In fact, when I originally had the bill drafted, I was going to raise the $25,000, $50,000, $50,000, and $100,000. And basically, the insurance industry doesn't want multiples of that. Initially, it was supposed to be $50,000, $75,000, and they said no, because it's two or more incidents, it would have to be $50,000 and $100,000. When I looked at the cost of that and also did research nationally, a majority of states have the $25,000, $50,000 as the minimum for the personal injury. While I personally think that that is very inadequate in terms of today's hospital and medical costs, I didn't want to include it in this bill and have it become cost prohibitive to people obtaining liability insurance. So I left that part out, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further discussion on the bill, Representative Bowen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My colleague in seat 36 asked the same question that I had in regards to that, so no further discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there further discussion on the bill, Representative Butcher?
Mr. Speaker, would the sponsor yield?
Will the sponsor yield?
Mr. Chairman, yes, indeed.
Mr. Chairman, sponsor, how many people right now are not carrying, did you see how, are not carrying any liability insurance? I know this uninsured driver is a major point. And would you think that this would add more to the problem of the, with this minimum of getting people to actually insure for something?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butcher, thank you for asking that question, because there's another bill coming along soon that addresses that. But in answer to your question,
The conservative answer is 10% of Montana drivers have no liability insurance. The Department of Transportation is not as conservative. They feel the number is closer to 20%. Mr. Chairman.
There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor has waived. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Anderson that when the committee does rise and report, after having had under consideration House Bill 205, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor, vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Perigoy votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 68 representatives have voted aye, 31 have voted no.
House Bill 205 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 209. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 209, introduced by Marshall, a bill for an act entitled An Act Removing the Limit on Prizes for Individual Live Card Games and Amending Section. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Marshall?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report, after having had under consideration House Bill 209, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Marshall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the body, this is actually easier than what it seems to be. All we're doing here is taking the prize limit cap off of live poker games. That's it. It doesn't change anything except what you can win. I know a lot of people have said that, you know, there's going to be a run on the poker tables and everybody's going to bet the farm. It doesn't happen that way. It's a table stakes means cash only. You can still have a structured game. There is no betting the farm. There's no credit gambling. There's no checks on the table. No car keys. It's simply just a live table. The owners of the card tables can choose if they want to run a no-limit game. They can still run a structured game. The option's there. Just if they want to have a no-limit game. It's very, very simple. So with that, I ask for go green.
Is there discussion on the bill? Seeing no discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? Correction, Representative Galloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had to stand in opposition in committee in this. You have to realize that's $800 per hand. That's not $800 per night. And I personally witnessed early on in childhood a couple uncles that had gambling addictions that not only did they lose their marriages, oftentimes they lost their businesses. Gambling can have addictive behaviors. Let's face it, if you're on the losing end and you lose one hand, well, maybe you go to the ATM and you get some more money out and you come back, and if you're not very good at it, you might just keep doing that. One of them recovered, becoming a dealer on the other side, and the other one finally came to his senses, but not after they'd lost businesses and family. I think we have a reason that we need to have a cap. I think, you know, gambling's been approved, and that's okay, and people can enjoy that, but let's keep a safe limit. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, this is the cap on prizes that we're taking off, winnings, not what you're putting into the machine. I can go downtown right now. I can stuff $2,000 into any of the machines down in any one of the casinos. There's only 156 registered tables in the state of Montana. I don't even know how many machines are on in Montana right now working. People want to gamble. If they want to play poker, if they want to play video games, that's the freedom of this country. We're not asking for the moon. I mean, how many people play the stock market? There's a gamble. Just saying. Look at your 401ks lately. So let's just look at this from the perspective of how many people actually play poker. Not a lot. It's a different kind of game.
I've watched many people put a lot of money into machines. I don't like machines, but that's just me. I'd rather have a game where I can sit down with people, socialize, enjoy some good conversation, and have a little fun. This is not talking about, you know, there is gambling addiction out there, but this is just a freedom bill for a certain sector, not everybody. So with that, I ask for a go green.
The question now arises on the motion of Representative Marshall that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 209, it recommend the same do pass. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paragoy votes no.
Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 42 representatives have voted aye, 57 have voted no.
House Bill 209 has failed to pass second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration SJ1. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, Senate Joint Resolution Number 1, introduced by Fitzpatrick, a joint resolution of the Senate and the House of Representatives of the State of Montana adopting the joint legislative rules. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Knutson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move when this committee does rise and report, after having had under consideration Senate Joint Resolution 1, it recommend the same be concurred in.
Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the joint rules, started over in the Senate, came over to us, passed out of the Rules Committee unanimously. Vote yes.
Is there discussion on Senate Joint Resolution 1? Representative Keenan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that House Joint Resolution Number 1 be amended and request that Amendment Number SJ0001.002.005 be posted and deemed read. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Keenan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the body. This one sentence in our joint rules bothers me greatly, and I have to ask you, and I'll go into as much detail as I need to, but I think it all boils down to a question. Why would our joint rules prohibit a statutorily required document from being attached to an introduced bill or even posted on our legislative branch website without a positive action by the bill sponsor? The process of drafting a bill is listed on your detailed bill information, and you go online, you punch in the bill number and all of that, and this list comes up. And it starts out with a draft requested. It moves the draft to the requester for review. The third step is the draft is in legal review. Out of the 1,300 bills that were introduced last session, 25 reached that high threshold of being reviewed legally for their constitutionality, whether that's federal, state, federal jurisdiction, courts, or whatever. At the beginning of every legal review, there's some disclaimer language that explains exactly what the issue is we have before us. And I'll read a little bit of that. I know I'm not in the Senate, so I have 5 minutes. But as required pursuant to Section 511.112.1(c)(i), MCA, it is the Legislative Services Division's statutory responsibility to conduct legal review of bill drafts. This review is intended to inform the bill draft requester of potential constitutional conformity issues that may be raised by the bill as drafted. This is not, and that's highlighted, dispositive of the issue of constitutional conformity and the general rule as repeatedly stated by the Montana Supreme Court, in that an enactment of the legislature is presumed to be constitutional unless it is proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the enactment is unconstitutional. So that is the process. Hopefully I can answer some questions, but I will leave it at that. Why would we prohibit the public and ourselves from having readily accessible information that our staff goes through? Now, there is a process where an individual or a committee in the legislature can request to be informed of any legal reviews that are attached or in the junk file, if you will. And I don't want to get into the weeds with that. So my overall question is, why are we trying to hide documents that are statutorily required to go through the process of our staff? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there discussion on the amendment? Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a great idea. Just a little bit of a disclosure. It will slow down the rules process a little bit from things getting printed and disseminated, but great idea. Vote green.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? Seeing no further discussion, the question now arises on the motion of Representative Keenan, amendment to Senate Joint Resolution 1, namely amendment SJ1.2.5. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paragoy votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 95 representatives have voted aye, 4 have voted no.
The motion has passed. The amendment has passed. Is there discussion on the bill as once amended? Seeing no discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor has waived. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Knutson that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration Senate Joint Resolution 1, do be concurred in. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. As once amended. Are there any absent votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stuart Paragoy votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 98 representatives have voted aye. 1 has voted no.
Senate Joint Resolution 1, as once amended, has passed, been concurred in the House of Representatives. Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the House Committee report. I'm going to be broke and my ice cream's all melted now. Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of the committee report. Majority Leader, I move the adoption of the committee report. I can read, I just don't know where to read.
Hello, Mr. Chairman.
The Chair recognizes Majority Leader Vinton.
Yes. Hi there, Mr. Chairman. Nice to see you. I move adoption of the committee report. I move the committee rise and report.
You have heard the motion of Majority Leader Vinton. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. The ayes have it, and so ordered. Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, we, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration business and second reading, recommend as follows.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of the committee report.
You have finally heard the adoption to adopt the committee report. All those in favor vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Clerk, record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 84 representatives have voted aye, 13 have voted no.
Committee report has been adopted. Thank you, Representative Durham. Order business number 8, third reading of bills.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 93, introduced by Green, a bill for an act entitled Eliminate Noxious Weed Seed-Free Forage Advisory Council.
House Bill 93 has been read three several times. The question is, shall a bill be passed by the House? All those in favor vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 98 representatives have voted aye, 0 have voted no.
House Bill 93 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 94, introduced by Green, a bill for an act entitled Repeal Montana Huckleberry Product Laws.
House Bill 94 has been read three several times. The question is, shall the bill be passed by the House? All those in favor vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 96 representatives have voted aye, 2 have voted no.
House Bill 94 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 102, introduced by Gillette, a bill for an act entitled Revised Laws Related to Accrediting Agencies for Healthcare Facilities.
House Bill 102 have been read three several times. The question is, shall the bill be passed by the House? All those in favor vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Has every member voted? Does the member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 98 representatives have voted aye, 0 have voted no.
House Bill 102 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 105, introduced by Green, a bill for an act entitled Revise Railroad Protective Device Funding.
House Bill 105 has been read three several times. The question is, shall a bill be passed by the House? All those in favor vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Has every member voted? Does the member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Seekins-Crowe. If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 98 representatives have voted aye, 0 have voted no.
House Bill 105 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 108, introduced by Logie, a bill for an act entitled Revised Requirements for Establishing Alternative Hours for Local DOR Offices.
House Bill 108 has been read three several times. The question is, shall a bill be passed by the House? All those in favor vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 98 representatives have voted aye, 0 have voted no.
House Bill 108 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 109, introduced by Bishop, a bill for an act entitled Code Commissioner Bill.
House Bill 109 has been read three several times. The question is, shall the bill be passed by the House? All those in favor vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Has every member voted? Does the member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 98 representatives have voted aye, 0 have voted no.
House Bill 109 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 116, introduced by Gillette, a bill for an act entitled Strengthen Qualified Provider Pool Statute for Children's Mental Health Services.
House Bill 116 has been read three several times. The question is, shall the bill be passed by the House? All those in favor vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 98 representatives have voted aye, 0 have voted no.
House Bill 116 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 134, introduced by Zolnikov, a bill for an act entitled Revised Laws Related to the Armory Account.
House Bill 134 has been read three several times. The question is, should the bill be passed by the House? All those in favor vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Does every member vote? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Zepfer. If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 97 representatives have voted aye, 1 has voted no.
House Bill 134 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 143, introduced by Dooling, a bill for an act entitled Revised Laws Related to the Tourism Advisory Council.
House Bill 143 has been read three several times. The question is, shall the bill be passed by the House? All those in favor vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Fitzgerald. If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 97 representatives have voted aye, one has voted no.
House Bill 143 has passed the House. Order of business number 9, motions. Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 188, extending funding to Coal Board, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 82, create Montana National Guard Enlistment Incentive Program, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered. Seeing no further motions, order business number 10, unfinished business.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 11, special orders of the day.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 12, announcement of committee meetings. Representative Gunderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Natural Resources will not be meeting today, but we will meet 3 p.m. on Monday with one bill. Thank you.
Representative Regeer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Judiciary, Monday morning, 8 a.m., two bills.
Representative Beattie.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section E meets in room 472, Monday, 9 a.m., day four of the OCHE budget. We'll be looking at the Tribal College Assistance Program and Research and Development Agencies.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Human Services will not meet today. Get your drafting done and pick up your bills. See you Monday.
Representative Dooling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House State Administration will meet at 10 a.m. Monday morning. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Appropriations Section A meets Monday morning, 9 a.m.
Representative Brewster.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Local government meets 3 p.m. Tuesday, 472, one bill and a bunch of executive.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Education, 3 o'clock today. Three bills, possible executive action. Room 137.
Representative Zolnikoff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Energy will not meet today. Have a good weekend.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section D, 8 a.m., 317A, Monday.
Representative Fielder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House taxation has had a change, and we will meet on Monday morning at 11:30 in room 152 for executive action.
Representative Keenan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section B will meet in room 102 at 9 a.m. Monday. Thank you.
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section F, Monday, 8 a.m., 317B, House Bill 8, House Bill 11.
Representative Logie.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No transportation committee meeting today, but remind you all, drive carefully this weekend.
Representative Buttrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No business and labor Monday. Enjoy the weekend.
Representative Schillinger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Section C, Monday morning, 9 o'clock, Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. Mr. Speaker.
Representative Essman, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I request to be off the record and out of the journal for purpose of an announcement.
So ordered.
It's a sad announcement for those of us from Yellowstone County. My husband just told me that former County Commissioner Ziggy Ziegler passed away today at age 89. For those of you who don't know, he was a community advocate. He and his wife, Stella, owned one of the most popular restaurants in downtown Billings. It's still running, although under different management. But while he and Stella ran that restaurant, they gave of themselves and their treasures to make Billings a better place. He was really interested in what happened to people coming out of prison. He worked a lot at Deer Lodge in the women's prison in his ministry. He hired them to work in his restaurant and was an advocate for the these people for his entire life. He was truly a man of faith and tireless service. May he rest in peace.
Thank you, Representative. Speaker Pro Tem Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request to be off the record and out of the journal for the purpose of an announcement, please, Mr. Speaker.
So ordered.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you all look at your desks, they look a little messy to me. Next week, we will be having the State of the State address from the governor on Wednesday. This is your first announcement. You must have your desk cleaned off by that day, or the sergeants will clean them for us, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Nicol, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I request to be off the record and out of the journal for the purpose of an introduction.
So order.
If you look up into the balcony there, that tall drink of water is my husband. You got to stand up, honey. He is supporting me while I'm here and homeschooling three of our four children and working full-time and taking care of two really geriatric dogs. So thank you, honey. Love you.
Welcome to the House. Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn and reconvene Monday, the 16th legislative day at 1 p.m.
You've heard the motion of Majority Leader Vinton. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House will reconvene at 1 p.m. Monday, January 23rd. The House is adjourned.